Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode. Miles, I was at this dinner party last weekend, and I just froze when I had to make conversation with someone I'd never met before. It was so awkward. I know I'm not alone in this. Small talk can feel like this mysterious social skill that everyone else somehow mastered.
Oh, I totally get that feeling, Lena. You know what's fascinating? According to Vin Zhang, one of our sources, most people think they need to sound clever or interesting when meeting someone new, but that's actually not what makes for good small talk.
Really? So what's the secret then? Because I feel like I'm always scrambling for something to say.
The surprising shift is that it's not about impressing people. It's about showing genuine interest in them. When you focus on being curious instead of clever, conversations become much easier and more enjoyable.
That's such a mindset change. I'm always worried about what I'm going to say next instead of actually listening.
Exactly. And research shows that people who ask more questions, especially follow-up questions, are actually perceived as significantly more likable. We're naturally drawn to people who show interest in us.
So small talk isn't just this painful social ritual we have to endure. It actually serves a purpose?
Absolutely. It's like the social equivalent of stretching before a workout. Small talk creates that initial comfort and trust before diving into deeper conversations. Let's break down the practical strategies that can transform anyone from awkward to engaging, even if you've always hated small talk.
You know, Lena, one of the biggest revelations from the research is how wrong our predictions about social interactions actually are. We're basically walking around with this faulty social GPS that's steering us away from connection.
What do you mean by that? Like, we're bad at predicting how conversations will go?
Exactly. There's this fascinating study where researchers had people on Chicago trains and buses either strike up conversations with strangers or stay silent. Almost everyone predicted that talking would be awkward and uncomfortable, but the people who actually had conversations reported significantly more pleasant commutes than those who kept to themselves.
Wait, so we're literally avoiding something that would make us happier? That's wild.
Right, and it gets even more interesting. There's something called the liking gap. After talking with someone new, people consistently assume the other person liked them less than they actually did. So we're not just bad at predicting how we'll feel, we're also underestimating how much others enjoy talking with us.
Oh my God, that explains so much. I always leave conversations thinking they probably thought I was boring, but maybe they actually enjoyed it?
Probably. And here's what's really counterintuitive. This isn't about personality types. You'd think extroverts naturally love small talk and introverts hate it, but the research shows that's not true. Even people who identify as introverts typically feel happier and more energized after social interactions. They just predict they won't.
So it's like our brain is actively working against us here. We have this negative voice telling us we're not good at this social stuff, when actually most interactions go better than we expect.
Exactly. Gillian Sandstrom, who studies this stuff at the University of Sussex, found that when people did a week-long challenge of approaching and talking to strangers, they got more optimistic and confident about their conversational skills every single day. The more you do it, the more you realize your fears were overblown.
That's actually really encouraging. So the first step isn't learning some magic conversation technique. It's just recognizing that our anxiety is probably lying to us about how bad it's going to be.
Bingo. And once you understand that, you can start to see small talk for what it really is. Not a performance where you need to be brilliant, but a collaborative game where the goal is just keeping the interaction flowing comfortably for both people.
Okay, so if small talk isn't just meaningless chatter, where does this drive to connect actually come from? Like, why do we even do this?
Oh, this is where it gets really cool, Lena. There's actually research on ring-tailed lemurs that sheds light on this. Scientists found that these primates save their vocal exchanges for the individuals they groom most often. And when they're separated from their grooming partners, they call out to maintain those social bonds.
Wait, so lemurs basically do small talk?
In a way, yeah. The researchers called it grooming at a distance. Instead of physical touch, they use vocalizations to reinforce familiarity and trust when the group is apart. And here's the key insight. It's not about exchanging information. It's about establishing that social connection.
So when I'm standing in line at the coffee shop making awkward comments about the weather, I'm actually doing something that's evolutionarily hardwired?
Exactly. Professor Asif Ghazanfar put it perfectly. He said, "Talking is a social lubricant, not necessarily done to convey information, but to establish familiarity." That's why small talk often feels so natural once you get into it. even if starting feels scary.
That's fascinating. So when someone mentions the long line or comments on the music playing, they're basically sending a signal that says, I'm safe, I'm friendly, we're part of the same group?
Right. And there's this amazing neuroscience finding that during face-to-face conversations, our brain activity actually starts to sync up across different regions. It's called neural coupling. Our minds literally get in sync when we're talking.
Whoa, so we're not just exchanging words, we're actually connecting on a neurological level?
Exactly. And this helps explain why small talk serves as such a crucial foundation. Before people can share meaningful information or build trust, their nervous systems need to check for safety. Small talk is how we do that checking. It's like our brains testing the waters to see if this person is someone we can open up to.
So it's not avoiding depth, it's actually what makes depth possible in the first place.
Perfectly said. Think of it as the social scaffolding that supports everything else. You can't build a house without a foundation, and you can't have meaningful conversations without first establishing that basic sense of safety and connection.
All right, so we've established that small talk is actually important, and our fears about it are probably overblown. But let's get practical here. How do you actually start a conversation without being that awkward person who forces it?
Great question. The key is what experts call reading the room, and I mean that literally. Before you even open your mouth, you want to do a quick 3-second scan of the person and the situation.
Okay, so what am I looking for in those 3 seconds?
Body language is huge. Are their arms crossed or open? Are they making eye contact or buried in their phone? Are they standing in an accessible position or clearly trying to avoid interaction? Someone wearing headphones and staring at their phone is probably not your ideal conversation partner then.
Right, that makes sense. I've definitely been that person who's clearly not available for chat.
Exactly. And it's not just individual cues. You want to consider the broader context too. A loud, energetic networking event calls for a different approach than a quiet bookstore cafe. At a conference, people expect more animated conversation starters. In a library, you'd want something much softer.
So it's like matching the energy of the environment?
Yes, and here's a pro tip from the research. The most engaging conversation starters connect to your shared immediate experience. Instead of generic openers like, how's the weather, try commenting on something you're both witnessing right now.
Can you give me some examples? Because I feel like I always default to the weather.
Sure. If you're at a conference, you might say, this speaker's energy is incredible. I've been taking notes like crazy. At a grocery store, have you tried this brand before? I'm always curious about new options. Or while waiting in line, this line is moving faster than I expected. Are you familiar with this place?
Oh, I love that. It's so much more natural than asking someone how they are when you don't actually know them.
Exactly. And what's beautiful about contextual openers is that they give both people something concrete to respond to. You're not putting someone on the spot to be interesting about their entire life. You're just commenting on a shared moment.
Plus, it shows you're actually present and paying attention to what's happening around you, rather than just going through the motions of social interaction.
Right. And research shows that shared experiences, even momentary ones, like waiting in the same line, actually strengthen social connection. When people do things together, they're more likely to feel positively toward each other and have longer, more meaningful conversations.
Okay, so I've read the room, I've made my contextual opener, and now I'm in an actual conversation. How do I keep it going without it feeling like an interview?
This is where the magic happens, Lena. There's this technique called the statement plus question approach that completely transforms how conversations flow. Instead of just asking, what do you do for work? You share something about yourself first, then ask the question.
So, like, give them something to work with before asking for something back?
Exactly. So you might say, I'm a graphic designer and I love the creative problem-solving aspect of it. What drew you to your current role? Or, instead of any weekend plans, try, I'm planning to check out that new farmer's market downtown. I'm always hunting for the perfect tomatoes. What do you like to do when you have free time?
Oh, that feels so much more natural. It's like you're having an actual exchange instead of just firing questions at someone.
Right. And there's psychological research behind why this works so well. It's called reciprocal self-disclosure. When you share something personal, even something small, it creates social pressure for the other person to share something in return. But unlike just dumping information on someone, adding a question prevents it from becoming one-sided.
And it probably makes people feel more comfortable because you're being vulnerable first, so they don't feel like they're being interrogated.
Exactly. Plus, your statement serves as a conversation model.
It shows them the level of detail and type of information that's appropriate to share in this context. If you mention both your job and your weekend plans, pay attention to which topic they explore further. That's your cue for what interests them.
So you're basically giving them multiple conversation paths to choose from.
Yes. And here's where it gets really interesting. There's this framework called FORD that gives you an endless supply of conversation material: family, occupation, recreation, and dreams. These four categories stay appropriately surface level for casual interactions while still being engaging.
Okay, break that down for me. What would those actually sound like?
Sure. Family might be, are you originally from this area? Occupation could be, what's your work like? Recreation is, what do you like to do in your free time? And dreams might be, what's something you're looking forward to? The beauty is that each category naturally leads to follow-up questions and related topics.
And you don't have to cycle through them like a checklist. You can just pick one area that feels natural and explore it thoroughly.
Exactly. The goal isn't to gather data about someone. It's to find that point of connection where you both light up and the conversation takes on its own momentum.
You know what I'm realizing as we talk about this? I've been so focused on what to say that I've probably been terrible at actually listening. Is that a common problem?
Oh, absolutely. And here's the counterintuitive truth. The best conversationalists actually talk less than you'd expect. They listen actively and ask thoughtful follow-up questions that show they're genuinely engaged.
So it's not about being the most interesting person in the room. It's about being the most interested?
Exactly. There's research showing that people who ask more questions, particularly follow-up questions, are perceived as significantly more likable. And it makes sense when you think about it. When someone shows genuine curiosity about your thoughts and experiences, how does that make you feel?
Really good. Like they actually care about what I have to say. But what does active listening actually look like in practice?
Great question. It starts with the basics: maintaining appropriate eye contact, nodding, giving those small verbal acknowledgments like, mm-hmm, or that's interesting. But the real magic happens when you ask clarifying questions like, what was that like? Or how did you feel about that?
So instead of just waiting for my turn to talk, I'm actually processing what they're saying and responding to it.
Right. And here's the technique that works really well: emotional labeling. When someone shares something, you can reflect back the emotion. That sounds frustrating, or you seem really excited about that. It shows you're not just hearing their words, but understanding their feelings.
Oh, that's powerful. It's like you're giving them permission to feel whatever they're feeling about the situation.
Exactly. And there's another technique called summary reflection, where you say something like, so it sounds like the best part of your job is the creative freedom. It demonstrates that you're processing what they're saying, not just waiting for your turn to talk.
I love that. It's like you're being a mirror for them to see their own thoughts more clearly.
Yes. And here's what's really beautiful about this approach. When you focus on understanding someone else, it takes the pressure off you to be brilliant or entertaining. Your job becomes much simpler. Be curious, be present, and help the other person feel heard.
And people probably walk away from conversations with you feeling really good about themselves, which makes them associate those positive feelings with you.
Exactly. There's actually research showing that when people feel listened to, it can reduce loneliness following difficult experiences. Connection really does heal, and listening is one of the most powerful tools we have for creating that connection.
Okay, so we've covered the mindset and the listening skills, but I'm still curious about the actual content. How do you move beyond those surface-level topics that everyone defaults to?
This is where observation skills become your secret weapon, Lena. Instead of reaching for generic topics, train yourself to notice unique or interesting details that others might miss.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Well, maybe someone has an unusual watch, a vintage band t-shirt, an interesting notebook, or unique jewelry. You can ask about the story behind it. Most people love sharing the history of items that have personal significance to them.
Oh, so instead of nice watch, it's more like, that's a beautiful vintage camera bag. Are you a photographer?
Exactly. You're combining a genuine compliment with a curious question. And here's the key: be genuinely interested, not just making conversation. When you show authentic interest in what makes someone unique, they often light up and become much more engaged.
I can see how that would feel so much better than the standard small talk scripts. But what if I'm in a situation where there aren't obvious conversation sparks?
That's where you can use what experts call free information, details about your shared context. If you're at a baby shower, ask how they know the mom-to-be. At a fundraiser, ask how they got involved. At a 5K race, ask about their training or if they've done the race before.
So you're using the fact that you're both there as the starting point.
Right. And there's this concept of moving up what researchers call the conversation pyramid. You start with those obligatory topics at the base, the weather, how was your weekend, but the mistake people make is lingering there too long.
Okay, so how do you climb up the pyramid?
As soon as you find that treasure, like if someone mentions they went to a Taylor Swift concert over the weekend, you dive deeper. What was your favorite part of the show? How long have you been a fan? What was the energy like? Suddenly, you're talking about emotions and peak moments instead of just facts.
And that's where small talk transforms into what people call deep talk.
Exactly. The research shows that people who have more substantive conversations report higher levels of well-being. But small talk isn't the enemy of deep talk. It's the bridge that gets you there safely.
So it's like you're gradually increasing the level of vulnerability and personal sharing as you both feel more comfortable.
Perfect analogy. Think of it as climbing a ladder of vulnerability. Each rung represents slightly more personal sharing, from facts and preferences to experiences and stories to feelings and reactions, and eventually to values and beliefs. Small talk keeps you in that safe zone while you test whether someone is ready to climb higher with you.
All right, let's talk about something that I think trips people up. How do you end a conversation without it being weird? Because I feel like I've been trapped in conversations that just dragged on forever.
Oh, this is such an important skill. Knowing how to gracefully end a conversation is just as crucial as knowing how to start one. And the key is reading those timing indicators and having a few polite exit strategies ready.
What are the signs that a conversation has run its course?
Great question. Look for natural pauses, whether you've both shared equally, and if the energy is still positive but maybe starting to wind down. Warning signs include repeated checking of phones or watches, shorter responses, or body language shifting toward departure, like someone angling their body away or taking a step back.
Okay, so once I recognize those signs, how do I actually exit without being rude?
The trick is to be specific about something you discussed, which shows you were genuinely listening, and end on a positive note. You might say something like, "It was so nice talking with you. I really enjoyed our conversation about that hiking trip you're planning. Hope you have a great rest of your evening."
So you're acknowledging the connection you made while giving them a clear signal that you're wrapping up.
Exactly. Or you can use what's called the transition. "I'm going to grab some coffee and check out the other booths, but it was really great meeting you." Or the future focus. "This has been lovely. Enjoy your weekend trip to the mountains."
I like that because you're not making up an excuse. You're just being honest about what you're doing next.
Right. And here's a pro tip. If you're at a networking event or party, you can introduce them to someone else. "I'd love you to meet Sarah. She was just telling me about her photography business, and I think you two would have a lot to talk about." Then you can say, "I'll let you two get to know each other."
Oh, that's brilliant. You're actually adding value by making a connection for them.
Exactly. And timing is everything. You want to exit while the conversation is still engaging, before anyone starts looking restless. It's like leaving a party when you're still having fun, rather than waiting until you're exhausted and everyone else is left.
So the goal is to leave people wanting more rather than feeling relieved that it's over.
Perfect way to put it. When you exit at the right moment with genuine warmth, people remember the conversation positively. They're more likely to seek you out again or think of you fondly when you see them next time.
And that builds your reputation as someone who's enjoyable to talk with, which makes future conversations easier to start.
Exactly. It's like investing in your social capital. Every positive interaction makes the next one more likely to succeed.
Okay, Miles, let's get really practical here. For everyone listening who wants to actually implement this stuff, what's the step-by-step playbook for transforming from someone who dreads small talk to someone who actually enjoys it?
Great question. Let's break this down into actionable steps. First, start with what researchers call low-stakes environments. Practice with baristas, waiters, neighbors, or coworkers, people where there isn't a lot of emotional pressure riding on the interaction.
So, like, build your confidence in situations where it doesn't matter as much if it goes poorly.
Exactly. These shorter interactions help you build self-esteem and get comfortable with the rhythm of casual conversation. Plus, you'll probably be surprised by how positive most of these exchanges are, which helps rewire your expectations.
Okay, what's step two?
Script a few go-to phrases ahead of time. Come up and rehearse 2 to 3 simple conversation starters that you can use when your brain starts sputtering. Caroline Fenkel from Charlie Health suggests having something in your back pocket like, "That's really interesting. Tell me more about that."
so you're not improvising everything in the moment when you're already nervous.
Right. And practice these phrases in front of a mirror, then with trusted friends or family. It sounds silly, but it actually works. When you've rehearsed the opening moves, you can focus your mental energy on listening and responding, rather than panicking about what to say.
What about the actual conversation techniques we should practice?
Focus on mastering the echo technique, paraphrasing what someone just said and then encouraging them to elaborate. If they mention struggling at work, repeat back, "struggling," with a question in your voice. They'll usually launch into an explanation, and that takes pressure off you to come up with original responses.
And that shows you're actively listening, which people love.
Exactly. Also, practice holding something during conversations. A cold drink, touching an object like a fidget toy, or just pressing your feet into the floor. It gives your nervous system something to anchor to when you're feeling anxious.
Oh, that's a great anxiety management tip. What about mindset work?
Huge part of this. Reframe small talk in your mind as a treasure hunt. Dive in eager to discover what fascinating tidbit you might unearth. Who knows where the conversation might lead? That curiosity mindset makes everything more enjoyable.
And probably makes you come across as more engaging because you're genuinely interested.
Absolutely. Also, give yourself permission to acknowledge your anxiety if it feels appropriate. Depending on the situation, you might tell a group of friends that you felt nervous, but appreciate the great conversations you've been having. Vulnerability often deepens connections.
What about having an exit strategy ready?
Yes. Know that you can leave whenever you want. Let people know up front that you have an early morning or an afternoon appointment. Having that escape route reduces anxiety about feeling trapped, which ironically makes you more likely to stay and enjoy the conversation.
So it's like giving yourself permission to leave actually makes you more present.
Exactly. And remember, pauses are natural. If the conversation hits a lull, don't interpret it as failure. Use it as an opportunity to take a deep breath. Silence is part of the rhythm of conversation, not a sign that something's wrong.
You know what I'm thinking about as we wrap this up, Miles? We've been talking about small talk as this individual skill, but I'm wondering about the bigger picture. What happens when more people get better at this?
Ah, that's such an important perspective, Lena. The research really shows that these micro interactions have macro effects. When people engage in more casual conversations with strangers and acquaintances, it doesn't just make them happier. It strengthens the social fabric of entire communities.
How so? Like, what's the ripple effect?
Well, think about it. Every positive interaction you have makes you more likely to initiate the next one. And the person you talked with is more likely to be open to conversations with others. It's like social confidence is contagious.
So one person getting better at small talk actually makes everyone around them more socially connected.
Exactly. And there's research showing that people who have more contact with their weak ties, acquaintances, neighbors, people in their extended network, feel greater happiness and belonging in daily life. These aren't just individual benefits, they're community benefits.
That makes me think about how isolated so many people feel these days. Maybe part of the solution is as simple as more people being willing to strike up conversations.
Right. And remember, the research shows that even minimal interactions, a smile, a compliment, a quick chat, are viewed as acts of kindness. So when you engage in small talk, you're not just practicing a social skill, you're literally making someone's day a little brighter.
And in our increasingly digital world, those face-to-face moments of connection become even more valuable.
Absolutely. There's something about that real-time, in-person interaction that you just can't replicate through screens. The neural coupling we talked about earlier, that brain-to-brain synchronization, happens most powerfully when we're physically present with each other.
So for everyone listening, what's the one thing you'd want them to remember from today's conversation?
I think it's this. Your fear of small talk is probably lying to you. Most interactions go better than you expect. People like you more than you think they do. And the person you're talking with is probably just as nervous as you are. The simple act of showing genuine curiosity about another human being is one of the most powerful gifts you can give.
And it's a gift you give to yourself too, because those moments of connection make us happier and less lonely.
Exactly. Small talk isn't small at all. It's how we weave the social connections that make life meaningful. Every conversation is an opportunity to practice being more human with each other.
I love that. So to everyone listening, maybe this week try initiating one conversation you normally wouldn't. Notice how it feels before and after. You might be surprised by what happens when you choose curiosity over fear.
And remember, you don't have to be perfect at this. The goal isn't to become a social butterfly overnight. It's just to be a little more open to the connections that are already available to us every day.
Thanks so much for diving into this with me, Miles. And thank you to everyone who listened today.
We'd love to hear about your small talk experiments, what worked, what surprised you, what you learned about yourself in the process. Keep being curious, keep connecting, and we'll talk with you next time.
Until next time, keep those conversations flowing.